welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. On Tuesday, in front of more than 5,000 people in Burlington's Waterfront Park, Senator Bernie Sanders officially launched his presidential campaign. Sanders says one of his goals is to upend the political system in this country to give more people a voice.
Today, with your support and the support of millions of people throughout our country, we begin a political revolution to transform our country economically, politically, socially, and environmentally.
How will Sanders' message be received in the early primary states of Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina? And will the national news media consider him to be a serious challenger to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? Or will they view him as a fringe candidate? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today. Megan Remmel, who is a political science professor at Norwich University and retired Middlebury College political science professor, Eric Davis. Great to have you both here today. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Good afternoon, Bob.
So, Megan, the Bernie Sanders economic agenda has been very popular here in Vermont. You know, now he's moving out to New Hampshire. Today he's actually in Iowa. How's it going to play out there?
I think it'll play particularly well in New Hampshire. Iowa has both this kind of blue-collar populist movement plus this kind of living out the American dream and not wanting to have to think about income inequality and wanting to achieve that dream and being in that class that Sanders would probably like to highly tax more. So I think within the people who are on the Democratic side in both of these states, it'll appeal. But I don't think he at this point has the ability to kind of pull independents over. I don't think he's got the name recognition yet or more refined ways of approaching some of these voters. Although I do think his very kind of hands-on meeting with the people sort of style is going to lend well to both Iowa and New Hampshire.
Wait, do you have a sense that the middle-class voters, those are the ones that Bernie says have been decimated over the past two decades, do you sense that those voters are feeling a lot of frustration right now with the American political system?
Undoubtedly, yes. So there is this growing resentment towards Washington, towards even state governments. All levels of government have been losing trust over the last few years, and particularly the last decade or so. But I think people simultaneously, they're frustrated with the economic condition. They're frustrated with stagnant wages, as Sanders mentioned in his kickoff event. But I think they simultaneously want to ascend to be in the upper middle class or the upper class, not necessarily the kind of 1% or 0.1% that Senator Sanders has really gone after. But I think they simultaneously want more done economically on their behalf while maintaining the hope that someday they'll benefit from some of these more elitist-oriented policies.
Eric, what do you think? How is the economic message that Bernie Sanders talks about, how is it going to play in New Hampshire and Iowa?
I think it'll play pretty well in those states. Iowa demographically is in some ways pretty similar to Vermont. You have a few large cities, but you have a lot of rural people. And Sanders has always shown an appeal in his Senate campaigns here in the more rural parts of Vermont. He's always done well in the Northeast Kingdom, for example, Franklin County, parts of the state where Democratic candidates don't always do that well. Plus, the Iowa process is a caucus, so the turnout's going to be smaller than in New Hampshire where it's a primary, and the activists tend to dominate the caucuses more. So I think Sanders will do fairly well in Iowa. I think in New Hampshire, he has a certain advantage of being a near neighbor. There's a fair number of Vermonters who'll go over there and do canvassing and other on-the-ground activity on his behalf. Also, New Hampshire has a history of supporting insurgent candidates and insurgents doing better than expected, going all the way back to Gene McCarthy nearly defeating Lyndon Johnson in 1968. And insurgent candidates in the Republican Party like John McCain in 2000 have done unexpectedly well in New Hampshire. Bob, one of the things, though, I'm interested in how Bernie Sanders will do is when you get past Iowa and New Hampshire, then the next two states, South Carolina and Nevada, have demographically different electorates from what Bernie Sanders has been used to here in Vermont. A fairly large number of the Democratic primary voters in South Carolina are African American, and a fairly large number of the Democratic primary voters in Nevada are Hispanics. And I'm very interested to see whether Bernie Sanders has an appeal to African-American and Hispanic voters. Hillary Clinton has traditionally done very well with those groups, and Sanders doesn't have much experience campaigning with a diverse electorate, just looking at the demographics of his constituency here in Vermont.
And our listeners can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What do you think about the Bernie Sanders for President campaign? Do you support this effort? What are his chances of becoming the alternative candidate to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? And can he raise enough money to be a competitive candidate? He says he needs between $40 and $50 million. Your thoughts about the Sanders for President campaign? 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Well, at his campaign kickoff, Bernie Sanders said the overarching issue of his campaign is the growing issue of income inequality in this country.
The issue of wealth and income inequality is the great moral issue of our time. It is the great economic issue of our time. It is the great political issue of our time, and we will address it.
Megan, it's kind of interesting. All of a sudden, a lot of candidates, Hillary Clinton and a host of the Republican candidates, are all talking about income inequality. So how does Sanders kind of own this issue?
So the thing that certainly works on his side is that he is consistently, I mean, for 30 plus years, this has been kind of one of the issues in his wheelhouse. So Rick Santorum declaring a couple of days ago, mentioning that he's got these kind of populist blue collar roots. Well, yeah, sometimes when it's convenient. But Bernie Sanders, it's always been there. He has always owned this issue. And I think given not only income inequality kind of across the United States, but the growing divide kind of between age groups in particular. So he mentioned at the speech that the youth unemployment rate being 17%. I really think that he could play on some of that disillusionment that's in the kind of millennial generation about not only income inequality across the country, but just how almost disadvantaged, it seems, and how difficult it is to be even a college graduate and get your foot in the door. So I think that it's certainly going to be one of his strengths. And he's already, even before he declared back in April, he has already been dragging this issue up. I think candidates are having to address it because he's brought it into the open for the campaign.
Eric, does Bernie Sanders really need to highlight his economic differences with Hillary Clinton?
Well, it's clearly going to be an area that he emphasizes. And one of the things that Sanders may do to distinguish himself from Clinton on the issue is note that his financial support throughout his whole career, House, Senate, now President, comes very, very heavily from individual contributions. I would say more than 90% of the money that Sanders will raise will come from individual contributions of $200 or less. The PACs, super PACs, wealthy individuals, corporations, all that money that's flowing around in the political system, that kind of money does not come to the Sanders campaign. And one of the things, again, without necessarily going negative and attacking Hillary Clinton individually, he can point out that Clinton, much more than him, is part of the system that depends on wealthy individuals, PACs, super PACs, interest groups, and corporations to fund politics. So Sanders will, much more explicitly than Clinton will want to or can do, frankly, will highlight the connections between the campaign finance system and what he believes is the correct economic policy for the United States as compared to the incorrect policy that we have now.
At his kickoff speech, Bernie talked about his economic agenda for this country. It includes a massive infrastructure plan to rebuild roads, bridges, railroads, and schools across the country. He wants to provide health care for everybody by expanding Medicare. He wants to shift away from a fossil fuel economy to one that's powered by renewable energy. He says his agenda will create millions of new jobs throughout the country. So how's he going to pay for these programs? He says it's time for very wealthy people to pay their fair share of taxes.
This campaign, starting today, is going to send a message to the billionaire class, and that is, you can't have it all. You can't get huge tax breaks while children in this country go hungry. You can't continue sending our jobs abroad while millions are looking for work. You can't hide your profits in the Cayman Islands and other tax havens while there are massive unmet needs on every corner of this nation.
Megan, is this a winning message for Sanders?
I think the ideas within the within that message are, of course, fantastic, and it's hard for anybody to argue against a lot of these in principle. But I'm concerned about the actual nuts and bolts of it. I think he would achieve some of these things by cutting defense spending, by raising income taxes on the wealthiest in the United States. But I think he also would like to go after corporations. And in the United States, we already have one of the highest corporate income tax rates of any country that's kind of a comparable economy to us, except second to Japan. So I worry that that message, if not only his Democratic opponents, but also the Republican field picks up on the fact that he would even probably try to raise tax rates on corporations, that would actually continue to push jobs overseas, which is exactly the opposite of what he wants. That's why he opposes something like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I wonder if that could be a downhill snowball effect of some of the policies that he's advocating.
Eric, some political observers say that Sanders is engaging in class warfare in this country. How's he going to deal with that accusation?
Well, he would argue that if you look at the record over the last 10, 15, 20 years, income inequality has increased. The share of new wealth and gains in income that have gone to the very highest net worth households has markedly increased. I'd like to come back, though, to something Megan was talking about a little bit earlier, where she was talking about aspirational voters in Iowa. And I think Sanders needs to be careful when he talks about raising taxes and things like that. Yes, he can talk about raising taxes on billionaires and point out the 90% rate that there was when Eisenhower was president. But the number of households with net worth in the billionaire class is actually quite small as a percentage of all American households. And I think what he has to do, and I'm not sure he's worked out the numbers on this yet, and this could be a pitfall for him either in the Democratic primary or from Republican opponents. If it turns out that his economic plan would mean an increase in taxes in households that are sort of in the upper end of the middle class into the upper middle class, I'm thinking of households with incomes of, say, between $75,000 and $200,000 a year. Households with incomes in those ranges have seen their taxes reduced over the last 10 years. And I think Sanders needs to be careful that there's not either the intended or the unintended consequence of his economic policies would raise taxes on households that may be above the median income in most of the United States, but don't consider themselves especially financially secure.
We've got a lot of people who would like to weigh in on this subject today. So let's start with Ken, who is calling from Ticonderoga, New York. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, hashtag don't count Bernie out. A. Number two, I was a Sandinista back in 83 when I moved to Vermont from New York to put a girlfriend through Trinity. And Bernie's been saying the same thing for close to 35 years. So don't expect the tune to change and don't expect him to act the apologist. He's going to continue to be the guy for workers' rights and families. So I think Hillary's got to worry about being the alternative candidate and stay tuned. That inside the Beltway thinking about, hey, he's a fringe, socialist. People get it. All you got to do is read the Facebook feed. It's like 95-5 or 99-1 positive. So stay tuned.
All right, Ken, thanks for your phone call. Eric, Howard Dean was on this program about a month ago, and Howard Dean is supporting Hillary Clinton for president. But he said he told the Clinton people, don't underestimate Bernie Sanders. Is there a chance that they will?
It's possible. I think one of the things Sanders would very much like to do is by the end of that sequence of the four early states, by the end of February, to be identified as the clear alternative to Hillary Clinton. Now, Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland, says he's going to declare his candidacy soon. And Jim Webb, former senator from Virginia, Lincoln Chafee, former governor of Rhode Island, is still exploring it. I think there's a reasonably good chance that Sanders could emerge as the leading alternative to Hillary Clinton by the time large numbers of primaries start in early March. And one of the reasons for that, and again, you know, O'Malley will get attention of his own when he declares. But as several of your as the previous caller noted, and as people who've commented about Bernie in social media have noted, Bernie has been consistent in his policies over the past 30 years. And I think one of the problems Martin O'Malley may run into is he may talk about some of the same issues, income inequality and so forth, but Bernie comes across as consistent, sincere, and really believing it, whereas Martin O'Malley, it's hard to distinguish sometimes where his policy goals separate from his own personal ambition. So I think Sanders has a good chance of sort of leading the pack of the alternatives to Clinton by the end of those first primary states. Now, what I wonder, though, is whether Sanders can raise the money needed to really be competitive once you go from one state a week in February to multiple states, some of them very large media-oriented states where retail campaigning doesn't count all that much once you get into March.
I definitely agree that that Sanders, even right now, but even as the campaign actually gets underway, that he is the alternative to Hillary Clinton right now. Lincoln Chafee is a Republican turned independent turned Democrat. Martin O'Malley is a Democrat, but he is very much a technocrat. He doesn't speak well to people. He gets bogged down in the nitty-gritty details. Alluding to the caller, what I'm concerned about with Bernie Sanders and whether Hillary Clinton the campaign takes him seriously is that he has been so consistent in not only his policies but also his delivery and his approach to campaigning and talking to people that it does come off as he's just in the race to bring up issues and not to actually win. But he says he's in it to win it. And if he is, I'm not entirely sure that the approach that he's been known for his entire political career is going to appeal to enough voters in enough primary states to actually make him the legit candidate who actually somehow manages to beat this Clinton machine.
Today on the program, we're looking at the Bernie Sanders for President campaign. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at the Bernie Sanders for President campaign effort. With me today, retired Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis, and also Megan Remmel, who is a political science professor at Norwich University. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking about that Bernie says he needs between $40 and $50 million to run a competitive campaign. Sanders also says that Supreme Court decision known as Citizens United is one of the worst rulings ever handed down by the court, because it allows very rich people to spend enormous amounts of money trying to influence the political process. And as president, Sanders says he'll support a constitutional amendment to overturn the Citizens United decision.
I will not nominate any justice to the Supreme Court who has not made it clear that he or she will move to overturn that disastrous decision, which is undermining American democracy.
So, Megan, how much traction do you think Sanders gets on this issue? Is campaign finance reform at the top of the priority list for many voters?
I don't think it's at the top of the priority list for many voters. But I also don't think that this is necessarily a huge concern at this point for Bernie Sanders because, as Eric mentioned earlier, he's never raised money from big dollar donors. That's never been part of his base of support. So I think what Sanders needs to do is to almost kind of have the same appeal that Ron Paul did to the younger generation of voters in 2012. If he does want these kind of smaller donations but in large numbers of total donations, I think that by appealing to kind of college students or just out of college or even kind of late 20s and early 30s voters, that he has an appeal to them and could get the sheer number in terms of volume of donations in these kind of smaller quantities that would help bypass the fact that he not only has never had these kind of high dollar donors, but also would not appeal to them now because he has been so vitriolic against them these last several decades, and particularly since post Citizens United.
And Eric, does money become perhaps an issue for Sanders that if Hillary Clinton raises tons and tons of money, that it becomes a liability for her and not an asset?
It could be. I mean, again, it depends on how Sanders wants to approach the campaign, and I think also how the media covers the funding of the Clinton campaign. Now, Sanders said in his speech, and this is a correct statement, that he's never run a negative political advertisement in his career of more than 30 years, and he's not going to change that now. There's this whole cascade of stories that's been coming out in the last couple of months about the emails, about contributions to the Clinton Foundation, about transparency. And there's a lot of reporters, especially Washington-based reporters, who are digging around more to try and connect some dots and develop these stories a bit more. So Sanders doesn't have to attack Clinton directly on it. But if the media narrative about the funding of the Clinton campaign starts to become that the Clinton campaign is funded by a lot of wealthy individuals, that there's a big Wall Street component to her financing, which there has been in the past, that the Clinton organization is not fully transparent about the sources of its funding, that there's murky super PACs working on her behalf that don't tell us very much about where their money comes from, Sanders can let the media run with that part of the story and continue to make the arguments he did on Tuesday in his speech about overturning Citizens United, having a constitutional amendment, the need for candidates to rely on small contributions. So the media can help him on this, depending how much depth and how many resources they devote to stories about the funding of the Clinton campaign.
I agree, but the new Quinnipiac poll that just came out this morning said that a majority of the people polled said that they don't find Hillary Clinton trustworthy. But the same number also said that they think she's got the qualities of being a great leader. I think at this point, people almost kind of expect some of this murkiness from the Clintons and actually don't – it doesn't seem to actually solidly change many people's opinions on the Clintons at this point, that they are – they have been known to kind of have some of these suspicious financial dealings, I mean, all the way back to Whitewater in the 1990s. And so I'm not entirely sure how much that hurts her when her reputation has been so solidified at this point that it's almost like we kind of expect it from them and let them get away with it because it's just the Clintons. That's what they do.
Yeah. Let's go back to our callers and talk to Bob in Burlington. Hi, Bob. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm wondering what the panel thinks about organized labor jumping into this. I mean, at this point, Hillary has not taken a position on TPP. Bernie has been against it for a long time. The boots on the ground are going to make a big difference. I'm sad to see that so many of our elected officials have jumped on the bus of Hillary so early, but there's something to be said for the Republicans will be taking so many swats against her. Bernie might be the only person standing and having somebody actually in support to be helpful.
All right, Bob, thanks for your phone call. Eric, Bob mentioned the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the trade deal that is being considered in Congress. Bernie's very much against it. He's trying to get Hillary Clinton to make a statement about it. Is that what we're going to kind of see through this campaign, that Bernie takes a position, he tries to get Hillary Clinton to take a position? And what about the role of labor in all this?
Well, I think the role of labor is going to be very interesting, especially in some of the larger states that vote a little bit later in the process. I'm just looking here now at a calendar of events, and I see there are three states that are holding events in March where unions are going to be an important factor in the Democratic primaries. Michigan on March 8th. Ohio on March 15th and Washington State on March 26th. And in all three of those states, you have relatively large organized labor constituencies that don't like President Obama's trade policy, whether it's autos and other manufacturing workers in the Midwestern states or aircraft workers in Washington State. And if Sanders vigorously continues his opposition to TPP and other trade initiatives, which he will, and Hillary Clinton continues to hem and haw about her positions on these issues, Sanders may be able to parlay that into support from unions in these states that have primaries and caucuses in March. And the support can be volunteers and organizers on the ground just as much as it's monetary. But the question for me is, what is the state of the Sanders campaign going to be heading into these bigger primary and caucus states in March. Will he have exhausted his resources by the end of the February primary and caucuses, or will he have generated enough momentum that he can continue as a viable competitive candidate into the larger states in March? And I just don't know the answer to that question at this point.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Tim in Hyde Park. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm here. Thanks so much for taking my call. I wanted to mention my initial reaction to Bernie when he was announcing the possibility of a run, and that was simply sort of guarded optimism. But when he started talking about the fact that he was going to run as a Democratic candidate, running a Democratic campaign, and the possibility that Sanders would not be a spoiler in the Democratic primaries, I became totally enthusiastic and committed to a Sanders campaign. And at this point, I couldn't be more happy with what I'm hearing from Bernie. I am totally committed to Bernie as a candidate in terms of my time, my attention, and my money going to Sanders' campaign. And the only way I would consider voting for Hillary Clinton is only after the point in time that Sanders withdraws. And until that time, I am totally in for Bernie.
Okay, Tim, thanks very much. And Megan, one of the decisions Bernie Sanders had to make was he going to run in the Democratic primary because he's the longest-serving independent member of Congress in the history of Congress, or was he going to take the independent route? And along the way, he said, you know, I don't want to be the Ralph Nader of 2016. I don't want to be a spoiler. So that really pushed him into the Democratic primary, and quite frankly, that's where the debates are, too, right?
It was a very pragmatic decision on his part. I mean, if he wanted to be on the ballot in most of these states, he was going to need to be within the Democratic primary field. A lot of states make it very difficult through ballot access laws to get non-major party candidates on the ballot in the first place. So I completely understand why he is running through the Democratic ticket. It is half of a liability, though, because he is also throughout his career also said that he's not going to be a Democrat, that he wouldn't run as a Democrat. But it does, in the long run, if Hillary Clinton were to end up being the nominee, that you don't have him being the Nader to Clinton that Nader was for Gore back in 2000. So I think he gets to kind of have his cake and eat it, too. So he gets to be a part of the Democratic campaign. He doesn't necessarily hurt the Democrats' chances at the actual White House when the general election comes around. So I all around think it was the right decision on his part. But he is going to need to shore up his answer on having kind of abandoned his independent ways.
Eric, it's a short campaign so far. I mean, he officially announced this week, although he said several weeks ago when he held his press conference in Washington that he was going to be a candidate for president. But what you've seen so far from the national media coverage of Bernie Sanders, do they see him as a legitimate candidate, or are they looking at him as sort of an eccentric senator from a very liberal state that's known for Ben and Jerry's ice cream and is sort of a fringe candidate? How do you think the national news media is treating Bernie Sanders?
I think the national news media is treating him very seriously. And I base this on articles I've seen in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, CNN, the Politico, several news and politics websites, the New Yorker, the Atlantic, and so forth. I would say the national press is covering his campaign very seriously and is not at all treating him as a fringe candidate. In part, it's because the national press likes competitive campaigns. They don't want to cover a Hillary Clinton coronation. They want to cover a real campaign where you have different candidates making arguments, appealing to voters, trying to organize, talking about issues. So Sanders is by announcing when he did and having sort of this aggressive push relatively early in the campaign is providing the national media with exactly what they want in terms of campaign coverage.
Today on the program, we are looking at the Bernie Sanders for President campaign. What are your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Do you support this effort? Do you have some concerns about it? What about his economic message? Will it play in Iowa and New Hampshire? Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Let's turn to Susan in Westford. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. Do I think Bernie can win the presidency? Well, did the Mets ever win the World Series? I think that my major worry about the whole thing is Bernie's safety. Because when Dr. Martin Luther King started talking about income inequality, we know what happened to him. And I don't think that the extremely wealthy and Wall Street are going to stand for Bernie reorganizing things in a way that they don't like. And so I'm very concerned for his safety. I think he comes up on the right side of every single issue that faces the bulk of America's people. So I hope he wins.
Okay, Susan, thanks for your phone call. Eric, at what point do these presidential candidates start getting Secret Service details?
That's a good question. It usually is late in the year before the first primaries and caucuses. Now, Hillary Clinton, in her role as spouse of a former president, already has Secret Service protection. The other candidates in the Democratic side and the Republican candidates, it will probably begin sometime in the fourth quarter of this year.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Beth in Rutland. Hi, Beth. Welcome to the program. Beth, are you there?
Oh, yes. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here too.
Hello?
Yeah,
okay.
You're on the air.
Okay. I told your screener that I'm a very jaded 60-something-year-old, and I'm very, very happy that Bernie is running. It's the first time in probably at least 16 years that I want to work on a presidential campaign. And the other thing I want to say is I can't believe a word that comes out of Hillary Clinton's mouth. So I think Bernie has a good chance, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
All right, Beth, thanks very much. Megan, what was interesting at the kickoff campaign on Tuesday was there was a wide demographic group of people there. There were a lot of college students there, people, middle-aged people there, retired people there. It was a very broad group.
In terms of age, definitely. So I saw lots of college students. I saw lots of older, probably retirees. But given that it was 5 p.m. on a workday, there was also a solid number of kind of your everyday office worker there, too. I think, as Eric alluded to earlier, I think one of Bernie's concerns, however, is the fact that he has spent his entire political career in one of the whitest states in the country. I think that he's going to have to walk a tightrope here on talking about income inequality, but not coming off as preaching or kind of directing minorities or lower income individuals that they need to follow his way. However, what he has going for him is that the Clintons alienated a lot of the black voting population, particularly in South Carolina, back in 2008. So while I think there's a lot of movement on the Clintons' part to kind of woo some of those voters back, I don't think that they as a bloc have embraced Hillary Clinton's campaign. And so I do think that even though he's coming from a state that is not the most diverse, I think he's got a chance to kind of pick up some of those people who typically would have supported Clinton otherwise.
Today on the program, we're looking at the Bernie Sanders for President campaign. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at the Bernie Sanders for President campaign with Megan Remmel, who is a political science professor at Norwich University, and retired Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. We've talked a lot today about domestic issues, but how much will foreign policy be an issue in this campaign? Here's Bernie Sanders discussing his views on the Middle East at his campaign kickoff on Tuesday.
Yes, we must be vigorous in combating terrorism and defeating ISIS, but we as a nation should not have to bear that burden alone. We must be part of an international coalition led by the Muslim nations that can not only defeat ISIS, but begin the process of creating conditions for lasting peace.
So, Eric, what do you think? Will foreign policy and national security be important issues in the Democratic presidential primary campaign?
I'm not sure whether they'll play a big issue in the primaries. They will certainly play a big issue in the general election campaign, because clearly there'll be a major difference between whoever emerges in the, as the Republican nominee, and Sanders and Clinton, certainly in terms of American foreign policy. Now, Sanders will point out that he opposed George W. Bush's Iraq policy in the 2000s, and he can leave unstated that Hillary Clinton did vote in favor of the war. But I think in the primaries, the major foreign policy issue may actually turn out to be more the trade issue and the international implications of international trade agreements on domestic politics and the economy than questions about U.S. policy, particularly in the Middle East.
I'm not entirely sure I agree with Eric on that one. I'm concerned for Bernie here. So he had mentioned earlier about Senator Sanders having kind of this ownership of the income inequality issue. Well, I think as her 4 years of being Secretary of State, she's got ownership on foreign policy. And so if he brings up income inequality and forces her into a corner, I think she's going to kind of fire back with foreign policy. And as you just played in the clip, that was the only mention of foreign policy in his entire kickoff speech. There were three sentences. And I was disappointed in that because I figured that this was a very friendly crowd. This was a place where he could kind of try out some phrases and some ideas in front of a crowd that was going to be very friendly on toward him, so that he could have more oomph to his statements when he does go to states that don't look like Vermont. So I wonder if it could come back and bite him if he brings up income inequality that Clinton can fire back.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Annie in Saxton's River. Hi, Annie. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a huge Bernie supporter. I moved here from San Francisco about 15 years ago, and I already knew about Bernie then just because I was aware of things happening in New England because I had family here. But I am concerned, and I just hope that his team, and I'm sure they are, but I hope his team really scrutinizes the lexicon in his speeches, the terminology he uses, just because certain political structures that we have here don't exist elsewhere, like town meeting. I had no idea what that was when I moved here, and it doesn't exist as an option or part of the process, the political process, in a lot of other parts of the country. So Clinton, Hillary is so well known on a national level, and I think for Bernie to be able to translate his amazing message, you know, into a national context, he's got to really be kind of sensitive and attuned to where people are at and the terminology that they use, just because, he could alienate himself otherwise and kind of be pegged as, you know, oh, a small state, small town kind of guy. So that's my only thought, but I think he's wonderful and he has my full support.
All right, Annie, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's talk to Sky, who's calling from Warren, New Hampshire. Hi, Sky. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is I just heard comments about Bernie possibly maneuvering his speeches or positions to force Hillary Clinton to take a side on an issue. But I actually disagree with that. What I think is that Bernie is the one that needs to be reacted to. I don't think he maneuvers. I think he comes right out, says what he means, does what he says, and everybody else has to react to him. He has been consistent for 30-some-odd years. He's genuine. He's sincere. And that is something very strange in the political world, and everybody has to react to, well, who is this guy that's actually honest?
Okay, Sky. Eric, I guess it'll be interesting to see when Hillary Clinton does start to react to Bernie, if she does.
That's a very interesting point, because to date, Clinton has been running a sort of quasi-incumbent-style campaign. It sort of looks like when Richard Nixon was in the White House and there were the criticisms of the so-called Rose Garden strategy. Clinton does not hold very many press opportunities. Her public events, even those on a so-called listening tour, are with invited, hand-picked audiences. She doesn't do large rallies. And I'm just interested to see how long she can continue campaigning in this way, or whether, again, the force of the press and who want more press availability than she's offered, and other candidates who start getting out there, will force her to come out and speak in more spontaneous situations to large audiences where she's open to questions from both reporters and the American public.
And Megan, I'm wondering if several months from now it turns out that either the work of the Clinton Foundation, there's some sort of smoking gun there, or these emails, and all of a sudden if Democrats view Hillary Clinton as kind of a wounded candidate, does that indicate that somebody else would jump in the race then? It's not going to be, you know, Democrats supporting necessarily Bernie Sanders or Martin O'Malley. Do we then see someone like Elizabeth Warren jumping in?
I genuinely believe Elizabeth Warren when she says she doesn't want to run. But I do think there are other Democrats who would probably like to run who didn't run because they just anticipated the Clinton juggernaut being part of this campaign. Do I think that even if the Clintons imploded that Bernie Sanders would be the nominee? I'm still kind of skeptical about that. But do I think that Bernie Sanders would then have a lot of influence on who the eventual nominee got to be? Yes. Or who the vice presidential nominee is going to be? Yes. So I think that he can play a role similar to what kind of Lindsey Graham's shaping up to be for the Republicans, is that even if he's not going to be the nominee, he can still be largely a kingmaker. I think he, even if he were to, I don't see him being Clinton's vice president, for instance. But if she were to get the nominee, the nomination, I could certainly see him having a lot of say in who the eventual pick is for vice president. So, no, I don't see him becoming president, kind of no matter what the scenario is. But I do think that he's got the potential to have a big impact on who the nominee is and who the vice presidential nominee is, and then who some of the cabinet members are going to be.
Eric, if that scenario played out, what do you think would happen?
Well, I have a somewhat different take on this. One of my concerns would be if Hillary Clinton ends up as the nominee and the Democratic platform and what she campaigns on the fall and the shape of the people around her don't seem to reflect all that much the issues that Bernie Sanders is talking about and the support he's received. There's a lot of differences, granted, between 2016 and 1968. But in 1968, Eugene McCarthy came very close to defeating Lyndon Johnson in New Hampshire. And then Bobby Kennedy got into the race. He did well in quite a number of states. He, of course, ended up getting assassinated. But there were a lot of disillusioned McCarthy and Kennedy Democrats from the spring campaigns in 1968 who were not especially enthusiastic about Hubert Humphrey being the Democratic nominee in the fall of 1968. And I would have a concern that if the Sanders movement, shall we say, feels not represented in the convention, in the vice presidential choice, in potential cabinet and other senior positions, that Bernie's supporters might not be all that enthusiastic about coming out and voting for Hillary in November. And if they stay home, that, of course, hurts Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate, particularly in many states that will have competitive Senate races next year.
We've got just a minute left, so for each of you, 30 seconds. How far does Bernie Sanders get in this presidential campaign? Megan?
I think that he makes it probably close to June. I think he's going to make it up towards the time of the Democratic National Convention. I don't know if that's going to be as a full-on candidate or if he's going to have dropped out at that point, but I definitely see him at least being a part of the picture all the way up through the nomination.
Eric?
I'm not sure he lasts quite that long. Again, I have my calendar of primary events. I'm looking at April 5th, Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Wisconsin. I think he'll be active until then. But how much longer after early April he continues, I just don't know. It depends on his performances in the four early states and then some of these larger states like Michigan and Ohio that have primaries scheduled in March.
Well, it will be fascinating to see how Bernie's message resonates with voters in those primary states. And VPR News plans to offer extensive coverage of the Sanders presidential campaign in the coming months. Many thanks to our guest today, Norwich University political science professor Megan Remmel and retired Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis. Many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you.
My pleasure, Bob.
That is Vermont Edition for today. On Monday, our focus will be on advanced manufacturing in Vermont and New England. This is an area of manufacturing that uses automation, software, or cutting-edge technology. We'll discuss the opportunities that are available in our region for high-tech manufacturing. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Michelle Owens. Liam Connors directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.